Hope you're liking our brand new podcast, Office Horror Stories. I'd like you to become our Employee of the Month. I'll even hook you up with a $100 Visa gift card for being the Office Horror Stories Employee of the Month. Huh? That beats any parking spot or having your name on a crappy little plaque down a hall that nobody walks through, huh? For your chance to win the $100 Visa gift card and title of Employee of the Month, all you have to do is give us a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Then, shoot me an email with a screenshot. It's that easy. You're entered to win the $100 Visa gift card and title of Employee of the Month. So, go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes, leave your review of Office Horror Stories, then email that to me. Send it to Tony at OfficeHorrorStories.com, T-O-N-Y, at OfficeHorrorStories.com, and you're entered. Once a month, we'll pick a brand new Employee of the Month, give them a $100 Visa gift card, and you, by leaving that review, help spread the word that this show exists. As many employers like to say, it's a win-win, huh? Leave that review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Send me the proof, and you are entered. Go ahead, go get it done right now. Thank you for the support, and we'll let you know. Have you ever had a coworker that went out of their way to lie and make up stories about you? How do you handle it when it's just your word against theirs? Is there ever a solution to this headache without one leaving the job or the other? That's today on Office Horror Stories.
Welcome to the world of crazy workplaces, Office Horror Stories.
Have a crazy workplace story to share? Call in toll free.
1-833-HATE-JOB.
1-833-HATE-JOB.
Or write in at OfficeHorrorStories.com. This is Office Horror Stories.
That it is. Want to share your Office Horror Story with us? You can write in at OfficeHorrorStories.com. Or that phone number, it's toll free, 833-HATE-JOB. Leave your story anonymously. Don't call anybody out of your workplace. I'll just leave the story and get it out. It'll be very cathartic. You'll thank us later. And then we'll all laugh about it together on the show. So please do share your Office Horror Story with us. Press subscribe on whatever platform it is that you are listening to this program on, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, whatever it is, you name it, press subscribe. That helps us grow those rankings, lets others find us, and do please leave us a review, especially Apple Podcasts. That's where like 90-some% of people get their podcast from. So reviews there help us tremendously in the rankings and showing it to other people that, hey, this show is out there. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you once again. Hello, Carol.
Tony, how are you?
I'm doing well. This is my seventh show of the day that I've been doing. It's been like a marathon day, not of Office Horror Stories, the first Office Horror Stories today, but it's been interviews and episodes of ghost stories and all that. So long day, but there you go.
God, your boss must be horrible.
He's a total dick. I totally hate him. I go to the bathroom as much as I can, and I say horrible shit, and then I write things on the walls in the bathroom, hoping that...
Then you realize he's right there with you.
Really, and that's the most inappropriate part of the whole thing. You write something really inappropriate about your boss on the wall in the bathroom, and then you realize, holy shit, he's in here with me, and then I...
And holy shit, this is my own house.
Yeah, it's a really weird thing. The pets look...
I just write that on the wall in the bathroom.
The pets look at me weird. Jen stares at me like, who are you talking to in the bathroom? And why do you have a black eye? It's like, I don't know. It's just, I'm an artist. Leave me alone. Then I run away.
I don't want to talk about it. My boss is horrible.
Exactly. I try to make my experience these days as authentic to a real workplace as possible. Although it gets really kind of confusing sometimes. So there you go. How's your day?
My day's fine.
Yeah.
I've had a good day.
Good. So you're not talking to yourself. That's a plus. Yeah.
And I'm not talking about my, I'm like, I actually have bosses.
Yeah.
So
can't say shit about that.
Right.
But they're not really bad. So that's,
no, they're not bad. That's the thing. It's like, I can relate to all these stories because of my previous jobs.
Yeah.
I can't complain about my current job. No. I have a very good job.
And I'm not being facetious either, because your current bosses were my last bosses when I was employed. And, you know, when I think about Office Horror Stories and stuff, I really have no Office Horror Stories involving them. I'm always pulling from other places. So I'm glad when I was working out there for someone else, I left it at a place where it was a nice it was a happy ending to all that. It wasn't like, I hate you all and I'm never going to work for people again. It was like, you're good. I'm good. Okay. See you later.
Yeah. And that's the thing, depending on your job.
Yeah.
It's never a really great idea to go out in a blaze of glory. And
no.
I have fantasized about that more than once. Like, when I quit, I'm going to do this and this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you never know. Like, down the road, you're going to have this job interview, and then it's like, no!
Yeah.
That guy from HR now works here.
That's the thing. You never know how those dots are going to be connected, or what company is going to buy what company, or who's going to show up. And I mean, I've seen it too. And it's just like, and the thing is, at the time you're like, there's no way any other company would ever hire this person. I'm completely safe. I can do whatever I want and say whatever I want. And then 3 years later, holy shit, someone thought they were like a valuable employee and they hired them at this whole other company. And
but we all know those people who keep getting hired. It's like,
know.
Man, because I don't think legally you can say as much as you used to be able to say about your employee.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like, yes, he worked here for that amount of time.
Yeah, what is that?
That might be about all you can really say.
Because I know that that's becoming a thing. And it's, I don't get it. Because references used to mean something. It used to be, yes, I do highly recommend this employee, but now it's come to a point where they can't even say good things either, from what I understand.
Anything.
From
yeah.
some, where it's like, I get it if, but I guess that's to negate the bad ones, where like, yes, they worked here. Were they good? They worked here. Because then that almost comes across as making everyone sound like they were bad, if you're not being able to say anything. But I hope they are able to very clearly state why they say that. That it's not a negative and it's not a positive. It's just that's all their corporation thinks they're allowed to say. Is that a corporate legalese type thing, or is that a law type
thing? I don't know, but I do think it's a lot of big corporations are like that.
Although in this case,
it's probably like some lawsuit thing. Yeah. We don't want Bob to sue us for giving him a bad reference.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's based on that. Somebody did that at some point.
Oh, you know it.
Yeah. Although at this day and age,
the thing, and I think you and I talked about this once, the thing about references is that you should always ask and not just put someone down.
Yeah.
Because that happened to me a while back, and it's somebody I really don't know that well. And they were asking those really specific questions. Like, can you tell me a time where he was under stress and handled it well? No, I don't know him. Like, I don't know. He's nice. He seems kind. Well, you know, and then they were just getting more specific, like weird situational questions. I'm like, I don't know. And the last thing I wanted to do is be like, look, I don't know him. So then I know that he's never going to get this job.
Mm-hmm.
If me as the reference says, you know, Bob put me down. I don't know Bob. He's never going to get the job then. So I just had to make some shit up.
I have a friend that's basically plays hopscotch in the radio industry. And just, you know, and radio, you move around a lot for a lot of folks. We've been fairly lucky in our careers that we haven't done the extreme moves that a lot of people have, but a lot of moving around the country for a lot of folks. And I got a friend who does this a little too frequently, and it is more so his fault than anybody else's. It's not like he's getting fired in a lot of places. It's more so, I don't like this place, I'm gonna move now. And
there's something better out there for me.
Oh my, and there never is. I mean, and he's very talented, but he never stays in a place long enough to get comfortable and to get set in. And then I always know that he's moving because I get reference calls before he even tells me that he's applying for these jobs. Like,
don't do that.
All of a sudden I get these calls like, hey, it's so-and-so from X94 in Montreal. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, calling about so-and-so. What do you know about him? I'm like, I'm guessing he's applying for a job with you is what I'm guessing right now. And the thing is, we haven't we've worked together in some capacities, but it's like I haven't been his direct manager for almost 20 years. But it's
like, find another damn reference. I can't give you a current
We're great friends, but it's just like, But
you be cooking meth as a side hustle now. I don't know.
It's an interesting thing. And it's just kind of funny. It's like, oh, then I'll call like, oh, so you're moving? Thinking about it. It's like I gathered from the three radio stations that called me earlier in the day. Did you say something good? I'm like, yeah, but I think I talked to them like 3 years ago when they called about you too when you applied. I've actually had that, I think, where more than one station has called back more than one time in a different decade. And it's like, I think we talked about this guy a while ago. And it's like, I got the same things to say. And I say nothing negative. I really, if he can stay and he's happy, he's a great employee. It's just he's got to be happy where he's at, as anyone does that needs to be. But it's kind of one of those things.
And it's all on your shoulders to give him a great review reference so he gets the damn job that he's going to leave in 6 months.
I think some people at some point, and I can kind of understand it because I think I was kind of feeling this way for a little bit too when I was moving around a bit, like 15 years ago. You can almost develop an addiction to moving. And I think it's something where it's like the newness of everything. And there's a level of excitement once you can get over the headache of it. And if it's not that big of a headache and you don't have a ton of crap to move around and it's, you know, relatively not that bad. You know, if you're, you know, kind of worn out in one area, it's almost like a school year's done. I'm ready for the next year. You can kind of want to keep going. And if you have nothing holding you back, I see how that can become kind of addictive. And I almost wonder sometimes if that's kind of what's going on, where it's like it's the high of the newness of a place that kind of gets you. And I get it. I felt that way, too. But then I just kind of I had to force myself to just stop and stay at a place for. And that was in Wichita. I just like after about a year or two, I was really like, I think I'm ready to go again. It's like. I'm really, for the most part, I'm good. But other than I want that high, and I just stayed. And so, I mean, it worked out. But I get that feeling. I think you can have that in any career if you're moving around quite a bit. That drive to, you know. It's the, I don't know, if it has to do with how our attention spans are with our devices and everything now, if that plays into it even worse. But back then, I mean, I felt it back then before we had, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, 833-HATE-JOB is our number, 833-HATE-JOB, to share your office horror stories with us as we psychologically evaluate our friends from a distance. Let's go to our first story. It says, so I don't work in this job currently, but as quoting one of my managers, if I didn't work here myself, I wouldn't believe you. I got hired at one of our local grocery stores after college. Having little money to my name, I couldn't be picky about my prospects. The town that I called home was known worldwide for theater. Locally, however, it was known as the strange town with too many rich hippies. This town is known for having left and right wing extremists, bizarre weather patterns, terrible traffic considering the size, and a large population of relatively safe and educated homeless, nudity, mineral water, and graveyards. There's only four in the area, one which overlooks an artificial lake, but the other three are right in town in the form of urns, a few blocks from the university, and one right next to where I worked. When I got hired, I showed up, did the interview, and asked the obligatory, do you like working here question, to which the interviewer looked away and gave a stock answer. I ignored that. I found out later that because she lived so far away, she would sometimes sleep in her car in the parking lot. Two other people were hired along with me, and they were both fired within a week. I don't remember the reason for one guy, but the other guy said his dad died and needed some time off to grieve when he went to Comic-Con. Some other small things before getting into it. My first day included a drain erupting from the middle of the store and pooling which smelled like raw sewage. Two of my coworkers were cousins of A-list celebrities. There were pictures, so it's legit. Several people slept together, including two of them having a foursome, and a psychopathic homophobe of an assistant manager outing her and tried to get her fired, but all of that pales in comparison to this bitch of a baker. When I got placed into the bakery on weekends, I was told to watch my back, which I had no idea what they meant by that, considering it was the bakery. I mean, who would, right? Anyway, the first day comes, I go in and everything seems normal. One of my coworkers was getting a surprise cake for her birthday with cookies included. The baker came over to me and gave me one of the extras, to which I thanked her and I ate it. I then asked before lunch, because I'm a hog, if there was another one. that I could grab. Later that day, I was called into the office by the assistant manager. This one was cool, who said the baker claimed I stole the damn cookie. Lucky for me, she had called the bakery union on him, who was like the mafia, and said that he was a racist, so obviously no one believed her. This lady would also say that people were giving her too much work and that they were wasting product, even though there were notes to the contrary. For a while, we were free of her because she had to go have surgery. But after maybe a month of coming back, she said that the frail bakery manager ran over her foot on purpose. No, wait, it was her wrist, probably her head, since she couldn't keep the story straight. This caused her son to come in and try to fight the manager, so he was kicked out by the police. A few days later, I come in and I'm informed that she was finally fired because she didn't call in for 2 days. However, this lady, who really is the scum of the earth, tried to say the day after that the reason why she couldn't call in was that she was kidnapped in Mexico and held for ransom by the cartel for a second time. She now works at a thrift store, and while browsing sometimes, I must stop myself from telling a manager what a lunatic this lady was. Sometimes I just want to tell her to go fuck herself right to her face in front of everyone. Anyway, that's my story. Go, Adventures at the Grocery Store.
That should be a book. The bitch of a baker.
You just think of the bakery ladies as like, oh, they give out these nice little free cookies to the kids, and they're baking, and it smells fresh and wonderful. You don't think it's like the baking mafia that's going on back there?
Well, and the whole being kidnapped by the cartel, I've never even thought about that excuse.
It's a great excuse to totally be used more often.
I went to Mexico and was kidnapped by the cartel. How are you going to argue with me?
Yeah.
Like, it was dangerous. And you're going to fire me? I was in danger.
My head was almost on a stick, and I just need a little more time off. Yeah, I mean, how do you argue that? I mean,
that is so bizarre.
Kidnapped by the cartel.
I like that the son was going to come in and fight everybody.
What you really want in situations like that is a hidden camera in the house of those individuals, where she's going back and she's telling the son about what happened, and he's getting all fired up and she's getting all fired up, and just the lunacy between the two getting fired up over their own insanity and their own stupidity, because it's just got to be, it's like, what the fuck is wrong? This is why natural selection is not working anymore, because you two exist. You know, it's proving it. In other places and times, this shit won't be going down because these people would not have made it. But now, you know, somehow the world goes on. But, you know, bakeries, too, are an interesting place. I can see why it may be a high.
A lot of pressure.
And holy shit, the hours are horrible. Because you got to get in. It's worse than working like morning radio or something. You got to get into the bakery at like 2 or 3 in the morning if you're doing it right, and get things going. So it's not even like, oh, I'm going to sleep till 5 or 6. It's you're getting up at like, you know, 1 a.m. to get there. And so it's totally fucked up hours that really don't align with anyone. And then you got to get all this right. And baking is very much a science. You fuck it up, you're fucked. For that day, there's not a lot of fixing it as you can do with other sorts of cooking and things. That stuff better rise. The yeast better be fresh and working. And it would be hellish. I hated baking. When I was in the culinary school, I just thought, you know, well, baking will be easy. No, it's tough to do it right and to do it good. It is.
And I know my limitations.
Yeah.
I'm way better off going to the store and buying it.
Sure.
No one would want to eat what I bake. No one. But I have friends that bake for, like, because they enjoy it. I'm like, how?
I don't know.
What's enjoyable about that?
I don't know if it's like
I have never baked a pie. My mom was a cake decorator when I was a kid. So as an adult, I don't think I've ever made a cake. I've made some no-bake cookies about 20 years ago. That's it.
Yeah, you make the brownies out of the box, you know, things like that. That's doable. But I don't know if it's because
I wouldn't even do that. I could go buy brownies that would taste way better.
That's true. I don't know what it is, because I like the creativity of cooking and things of that nature, where it's not super scientific. When I have to start measuring shit out to like exact grams and everything to make it work correctly, you lost me. That's not fun anymore. That's just like tedious work. And I like the creativity. And to me, baking, yeah, you can get kind of creative, but you can also fuck it up really fast. And when I've gotten wild hairs every now and then, like, I'm going to try doing bread and this or that. And every time I do, it's like, it always kind of turns out half-assed.
Hey, bread.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, it's like, if I just went down the road to the Fresh Market, I could have gotten something 10 times better and spent a quarter of what I just spent on all these ingredients. And yeah, so that's what I
But I hope whoever just wrote in that story is now listening and going, I get why the baker was a bitch. I never really thought about that. She had a horrible, sucky job.
And now she
hated it.
She's gonna.
She was never good at science and measuring. Of all the pressure on the, and now at the secondhand store, she's probably super happy. She likes pricing things. You know, maybe she's great.
She should just go there and just give her a big hug. Just walk up to her randomly and don't say anything. Just walk in and just bear hug her and then see what happens.
You're the best baker I've ever met in my life.
And then just start sobbing uncontrollably as you're hugging her and just see what happens.
That would be even better.
Like, I'm so sorry you were such a bitch to me. But don't make it. Don't say you were sorry. Just like apologize for her while you're sobbing.
I'm so horrible. And now I get why. Now you're working at the secondhand store.
It'll go over great.
Respect to people who work at secondhand store. Stores, I will shop in them. I've got no problem with that. I wouldn't be writing in and saying I'm mean to people I'm not.
I love wandering around them. There's always interesting things to be found. I had been collecting, one of my favorite things I've been collecting at secondhand stores lately, or not lately, but a while back, was the cookbooks from the late 70s that were all about like the glory of the microwave. And there's these horrible recipes in there about how to like cook roasts and all sorts of shit you shouldn't cook in a microwave, but people were trying to cook it in a microwave. And it's just, and the pictures are just god awful. But at some point in time, somebody looked at these things and went, that looks delicious. And now it's this weird cornucopia of recipes that are just like of what not, a guide of what not to do. It's kind of fucked up, but they're funny to look at. I have a microwave right now in this house that we just got into. That kind of scares me. It's built in to the oven. It's right above the oven. It's like this. I thought it was like a top oven, but it's actually a microwave. And you open it like an oven door. And I've noticed that if you open the microwave, because I never press stop on the microwave. I just open the door and that stops the microwave, or always has in every microwave I've ever had. So when I open the door, like at the 1 second mark, because I don't want to hear the beeping, the microwave still is kind of running. And I'm always kind of concerned that like, shit, like it's microwaving still. And like now the door is wide open and my head's right there. And I was like, is this like just kind of how the microwave works? It's a nice microwave. It's like a Whirlpool or something. And I don't know. It's just, it's kind of like concerning. Like I could stick my hand in there for a second and probably get my hand microwaved.
But you said something there that intrigued me. That you like to open the door before the beeper.
Yeah.
Like, that's so funny, because I've wondered, like, why not just let it go and only had 1 more second?
Well, sometimes...
You just don't want to hear the beep.
Well, that, or sometimes I'll put something on if I'm, like, just reheating something. I'll just press the 1 minute button, and I really, because it's quicker than me putting in... I know I'm saving 0.5 of a second here, but it's quicker to press just 1 minute versus putting in 18 seconds or 15 seconds or whatever, then I'll just...
That- beep, beep, beep is longer than the beep, beep, beep.
Yeah, exactly. It's pointless. I'm saving 0.5 of a second and risking cancer. So that's kind of what's going down with my microwave right now. And I'm kind of like, should I get a different microwave or risk dying? I don't know. I don't know if this is how it's supposed to work or what. I think it is. It's just I got to get used to it. So I've never had a microwave that does that.
Try this. Let it go to the beep and let it stop on its own.
That might be a better solution than buying a new microwave.
See if it's still microwaving at that point.
Is that
just not to save your life?
Is that the sensible thing to do versus spending a whole bunch of money on a new microwave?
I just don't want you to die from the microwave. And I'm sure, like, there's a lot of people who die from the microwave.
It's going to be like asbestos.
Yeah.
One of those things. We have to, like, there'll be, like, people that come up with a hazmat suit to remediate microwaves at some point in time. It's like, that shit, you know, the door was shut, but fuck, it's microwaves, you idiots. Microwaves are coming out of this thing. You think this plastic door is going to save you from the microwaves? You know.
And you, Tony, opening it before it was finished.
Yeah.
You're microwaving yourself directly.
It's like, no wonder you have these giant tumors coming out of your skull. It's like, I just was trying to make popcorn and... Look, I'll be on one of those commercials. It'll be fucking horrible. It's like,
I got shit. Can you see him? Are they noticeable?
This is the dangers.
Giant tumors.
My name is Tony Bruschi, and I microwaved. I opened the microwave before it beeped. Don't let this happen to you. The more you know. Yeah. 833, hey, job. Next story. It says, this is an anonymous person writing in from a time when I worked from a startup company in Wisconsin. I was hired as their receptionist. I was young and naive, and more than anything, I was in a spot in my life where I didn't know what I wanted to do with my future. The gig was part-time. The company had only 12 employees, including me. The eighth-story office in the downtown area had beautiful dark wood furnishings, glass conference rooms, and warm and inviting lighting. It screamed of professionalism, which made me feel very proud to be a part of. Eventually, my coworkers started telling me about the CEO and how they felt the whole company was going downhill because of his old school mindset on running a business. I brushed it off as my job didn't require me to work directly with him one-on-one. About 3 or 4 months into working there and dreading the boring days, we were relocating to a smaller office across the downtown area. Upon packing up our office, the CEO and the VP, who were standing with me at the time, thought it would be a wonderful idea if I went out to the CEO's condo just across the street to grab a few office-related items and to do his laundry. I was beyond stunned. I knew coffee runs were common with my job, but I started to wonder if all receptionists were required and requested to do the boss's laundry as a norm. No, I thought, this couldn't be right. How was this laundry in any way, shape, or form related to the productivity of this company? Absolutely not. I spoke to my sisters about the unusual requirement needed of me, and they too were appalled. On top of that, the company was already struggling financially as we were living off investments and no revenue. My biweekly paychecks were becoming tri-weekly, sometimes more. My coworkers and I were hanging on by a string to trust that we might get paid and get paid on time, as continually promised. The next day, I threw in the towel and told my direct supervisor, the HR guy, that I was quitting that day. He tried hard to persuade me to stay and wondered if it had anything to do with the late paychecks. In part, yes, but mostly it was not going to be due to that. I was not going to be doing anyone's laundry unless it was my own. I refrained from telling HR about that as I knew the HR guy was in good graces with the CEO. Apparently, when I left, I heard the CEO was livid that I quit. Guess he'll have to find someone else to do his dirty laundry. Thanks for letting us chime in about our office horror stories. Tony, I wonder if you've ever had any office horror stories working at Real Ghost Stories Online. I think we covered that at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, you're a horrible boss.
And my stresses with that.
And then you have your employees like me.
Yeah. Yeah, you do horrible things over Skype. It's just like, holy shit. No, I mean, I don't have any horror. I mean, all the stress I create, for the most part, I create for myself. It's just, I'll put like ridiculous deadlines on things. They're like, I want to get all these things done right now. I don't delegate anything to anyone other than myself. So, I don't know. It's just kind of my own little world, but it's just kind of the ship that I drive.
Well, here's the crazy thing is that you do have to do your boss's laundry.
I do. He's a dick. You should see. And he needs to wipe more. I mean, let me just say that much. Holy shit.
Well, that's disgusting. Like, you ask their employee to do their frickin' laundry. Like, that's the most ridiculous thing ever. The 3 weeks, the missing pay periods, that's a deal breaker for me. Because you have money going out. You have bills that have to be paid on certain days.
Yeah.
you can't be a week or 2 weeks late with a paycheck.
I don't know how companies
bring the boss's laundry.
Do that and just get away with it. But you know, I'm also surprised sometimes how long it takes employees to stand up on some of these things where it's like, oh, they stopped paying us 2 months ago. Really? And you're still working here? It's like, well, I need my paycheck. Clearly you don't, because you're still working here. It, like, there's other jobs, you know. I mean, and it's not always easy just to jump to a new job, but I get like if by you're there the third or fourth week and you're thinking, well, maybe this will clear up. But after, like, you know, I've been here, I hear it where it's like 4 or 5 months, like, what the fuck? Like, if they're not paying you then, you're never getting paid. They're betting that either things are going to change or they're just going to go out of business and then they don't have to pay you. And that's the reality of it, unfortunately. And they're banking on your goodwill and loyalty. And that's just a sad thing that people do that to others. But
I've had checks bounce before. Sure. So then you deposit the money and the same day you probably sit down and pay your bills. Your check bounced. Their check bounced. And now your checks are the equivalent of that these days. Mm-hmm. You know, your payments are bouncing.
Yeah.
I mean, not good. Not good.
No.
And that laundry thing just pisses me off.
Never had to do a boss's laundry. I had a boss that would always ask people to do, it was a lot of babysitting, a lot of literally like, go watch my kids so I can go to my pontoon. He would often have some of our like weekend part-timers do that stuff.
See, I've never.
Washing his car. Yeah.
I have volunteered to pet sit for my bosses before. Like, I love doing that.
Sure.
Or house sit, or, you know, when someone's on vacation, I got no problems checking out their house when they're gone, taking care of their pets.
Yeah. It was
no laundry. And there's just certain lines, like laundry or cleaning somebody's house, or like certain jobs, cleaning the bathrooms are part of your job, but I don't want to clean the bathrooms at your house.
Yeah, I mean, unless that's the workplace, that's not something you should be asking people to do. No. 833-HEY-JOB, 833-HEY-JOB, the phone number to call, toll free, share your office horror stories or write it in. You can do it anonymously on our website at officehorrorstories.com. Next one, it says, my last job was as an AV lackey, means audio visual. I was in my respective building. Across the street was another school building where someone else was supposed to be working. When it came time for him to do his orders, he went out to eat and shut his phone off. So, of course, that meant all his work fell right onto my lap. What this also means is I need to spare my own equipment because I don't have any access whatsoever to the equipment closet across the way. So I get a call that I need to bring over a computer and do whatever the tech asks, etc. I know this teacher. I had him before. People fucking hated him because he was an angry dude. I didn't fully understand him until I became equally bitter and curmudgeonly. But we were tight at this point. I complied. I was using one of the computers projecting onto the white door, which was working well. Instead of shutting it down, disconnecting it, and making this teacher wait any longer, I rushed out, grabbed the only other computer left, and went across the street. Brought it up to the teacher, and then, what do you know? The fucking keyboard and mouse don't work. So I tell him, hang tight, I'll be back in 10 minutes and have this fixed pronto. Take the elevator 12 floors down, cross the street, avoiding taxis, to go grab this other fucking computer, and I get a call. It's my boss. The teacher called my boss to tell him how this is ridiculous, and I start getting berated for not doing my job right, and that I'm irresponsible and whatever the fuck else he decided to throw my way before I just completely tuned him out. It's worth mentioning that when I got back, the teacher apologized profusely because he said, oh man, I hope he didn't think I was mad at you for it was you I was complaining about. It was the other kid who's a jerk, and when I see him, I'm going to have a serious talk with him about that asshole, which made the Hulk meter go down a bit. Meanwhile, I can say with absolute confidence that I was one of the only student workers who took that stupid fucking job seriously and never once had anyone complain. I never once took a fucking day off. In fact, I worked a 12-hour shift for the fucking guy on my day off while I had the flu because the people I covered for just decided, hey, I'm not going to work that day, and I won't tell a fucking soul. It left a very bad taste in my mouth. It soured my opinion of the guy tremendously. He'd always remember your insignificant fuck-ups and never recognize the fact that you went well above and beyond the call of duty to save his hide. I just got angry right now writing this. And I understand why.
All the F-bombs. I did not pick up on any anger.
None whatsoever.
I like how he said he didn't like the guy until he himself became bitter and curmudgeonly.
At some point, it just hits you, and you're like, yeah, I get it. I understand why people are like this.
Well, what I don't get, though, are bosses like that.
No.
Like, you know when you left and the person can't get in the storage area where they need to get things, mm-hmm. what are they supposed to do? And then they turn around and blame it on that person.
I think with people like that...
Why do you get to be such an asshole?
It creates an opportunity for them to be an asshole, which they feed off of. So they passive-aggressively put...
Power thing.
Yeah, it is. They,
power thing.
They put these people in positions where they're not going to be able to get from A to B without them being there to help them get there, even if they want and are completely qualified to do it themselves. They have to be the key holder to do it. And if something gets fucked up along the way because the person couldn't do their job right, well, who's coming to the rescue? And then who's the bad guy and who's the good guy? It's a whole power thing. You're exactly right. But there's a lot of people that are like that.
But I'm so not like that. I'd be the person, you know, if they call me, I'm so sorry. Like, I left with a key. I didn't mean to leave with
sure.
a key. I'm so sorry. I'll be right back. Just own it.
Yeah. Like, hey, honest mistake. I didn't realize.
There are so many people like that.
Yeah. There is. And it's one thing to be, you know, embarrassed about it. Like, oh, but then just own up to, like, shit, I'm sorry. I forgot. And all is forgiven. We all make mistakes. But things like that where then they go into this power trip, you know that person did that sort of that narcissistic move completely on purpose. And they'll never own up to it. But that's exactly why they did that. And then they only remember the negatives and all that. That's always, you know, I'm not someone who loves the let me praise you and then come to you with my negativity things. But I do not appreciate the no matter how good you do at everything, the only thing we're ever going to talk about are your faults. That also not right. effective at all.
That's not good. That's not a good managerial style.
How are you? And I know like the common managerial style when it comes to addressing someone's fault. If they did do something that needs to be addressed that you didn't set them up for failure with, is typically that, you know, approach it with something positive and then you can discuss the thing that needs to be corrected or the negative and then end it on a positive. I always hated that shit. I hate the
I'd
dance.
I'd rather people just be honest
yes.
with me because usually as an employee, you know if you messed up.
Yeah.
It's not a surprise if you get called out on it. You know.
Yeah.
You were just hoping you wouldn't get called out on it.
Sure. And that happens. You're like, maybe they missed it. But I hate
so just
the dance.
Own it.
I know.
But you don't have to tell me that I'm very good at catching typos and then go in for the kill on something else.
And fireflies. Holy shit, you're so good at catching fireflies, but you know what? You really fucked up this weekend. It's like, what? Yeah.
But this week you cost the company $10,000. Oh, whoops.
But hey, how's that firefly jar doing? Okay, you keep up with those fireflies. Okay, bye-bye. You're on notice. It's like, what? What the fuck? No, that sort of thing. I don't know why I brought that up. I was discussing that with Jen the other day. Oh, it was, okay, it was about how, it was about parenting. Because just how our daughters are and how to communicate with them. I have one.
That's management every day.
Oh, completely. And
you
they're completely different employees. Like the younger one is a lot like me. It's just like, no bullshit. Get straight to it. Tell me what the problem is. I will fix it. I get it. I own it. Don't bullshit me. The other, you have to do the song and dance. And I'm someone who's hated the song and dance. So I automatically assume everyone else hates the song and dance. When in reality, I think that's 90% of the population, which is why that's the common thing that managers do. For as far as how you manage someone, which is why I'm not a good manager, because I can't speak the language of everyone because I don't think that way. And if I think it's insincere, I won't do it, even though that's how it needs to be conveyed. So I'm not good. I just get right to the point on things. And then you get the shut down, eyes glazed over look. And so we got to do more of the, hey, you know, you did really good at this or that, but you know what? And that's something I need to work on. You know, I thought, great, I never have to do this because I'm not in management, but I'm a parent. So essentially I'm in management and I have to get better at that skill, but it's so hard for me. It's so hard to do the, you know, I'm always happy to praise the good things. I just don't like to sandwich it with bullshit. That's the thing.
But keep in mind, you have a child.
I know.
His brain doesn't work quite like yours yet.
One of them does.
A little cushioning wouldn't be bad.
But I do talk about the positives. It's just when there's like a negative or something that we should work on. I don't like going in attack mode or anything. But it's just like, hey, you know, but only way to get even at a cushiony level, it's like you still have to go in with, the super positive first. It's something that I never liked as a kid either. And that's why it's hard for me, because even as a kid, I didn't like it. And
but I don't think as a parent I could do that either.
It's tough. Like,
seriously, you just broke the bathtub. And I don't even know if that's possible.
No, it's possible.
You broke the bathtub.
When you're a parent and you have kids, anything's possible.
You know, nobody can take a bath because of you.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like when there's shit like that and you're trying to communicate how bad this was and what, you know, what the real world consequences are. I am not good at beginning that. No, you know, just knowing what the fuck just happened, going in with, you know, hey, the other day, so I don't even know what to begin with, because it's like, to me, it's just false sincerity. It's like, let's get to the point and let's just fix the problem. I'm not about dwelling on problems ever. It's more just like, here's a problem. Here's what we need to do so it doesn't happen again. And you need to understand what the real consequences were. That's it. But
I think that's fair. Yeah. I think that's fair.
That's all it is.
I like that approach.
It's not berate you forever and then pick on you for the rest of your life. And it's like, no, it's just, here's what happened. I want to know what you thought, why we got to this place. And then we can correct that so we know what the misstep was here that we got there. And then we can fix it. But here's what happened. And that's it. Yeah. So anyway, but that's management. And it's, I'm not good at it. I can manage myself. And even that, I frustrate myself quite a bit on. So
I think like a lot of people have problems in certain, let's say fast food, for example. Mm-hmm. A lot of the management, those people aren't that much older than their employees. Mm-hmm. Not every fast food place, but you know, in some places like that.
Sure.
So you've got people who really don't have the world experience that they need to be in management, to properly manage people, but you've given them some power. And with the power, instead of being a good manager, they just turn into big assholes.
Yeah. It's like dictatorship.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I said so.
And this is how it's going to work. I think I was some of that when I was in management, because I was young and dumb, and I had a couple really good managers and I had a couple really bad managers, and I think I really knew what was effective or what was not. But one of the problems I had too, and this is crazy when I look back on it, I was 16 when I had my first program director job. Most of my
that's just stupid.
I know, and most of my staff was like in their 30s or 40s.
Like, who would hire you?
But it was
Tony. I love you. You know that.
It was crazy.
Great friends, but that's some crazy stuff.
It was crazy, and I was so frustrated because my boss who had left me was a great boss. In fact, he's the male voice that you hear on the intro of our show. And he was my favorite boss by far. Taught me a ton of stuff. And then he left. And they didn't know who to hire. And then I ended up getting the job because I'd basically lived and worked at the radio station the past 3 years, day and night, and knew the ins and outs of the place more than like anyone. And they thought, well, let's give him a chance. And so it was the most frustrating thing in the world. And I get it. I get why, even if my ideas were good, it didn't matter. I was 16. And who the fuck is going to listen to a 16-year-old?
Especially because you got the 50-year-old news guy.
Yeah.
I've been doing news there forever.
And we're still good friends to this day. It was just dissension immediately. And it was like,
so crazy.
It was insane. But, yeah, but then even as I got, it was a total uphill battle, because I had done management things pretty much up until I met you in Wichita. I didn't do anything management there. But every position I had previously was, but I was always like the youngest on staff. Because I was doing management stuff, so I was like, 23, 24, and my staff was always much older. So it was always dissension. But now that I'm getting older, I'm looking back going, I get it. I totally get it. Whether the dissension was called for or not, it's human nature. It is what it is. And there really wasn't, necessarily a way around it. So I don't know. I was completely burned out on that by my early 20s. And I just said, fuck it, I'm done doing this. Maybe it'd be different these days. I don't know. But I hope to never have to be in that position again. I'm just going to sit in my house and rot.
Who was the upper management who thought that hiring you at 16 was a good idea?
Well, not as management, it was a good idea, but as management, it was a bad idea. The owner is still there, and we're still friends. We're still good, but it's one of those funny things you look back on. He's probably about my age now when he made that decision, and maybe he looks back on that the same way, going, "Yeah, what the fuck was I thinking?" Doing afternoons on the Adult Contemporary station, and I was doing nights on the Rock station, back to back, live both shifts, programming the Adult Contemporary station. And I had this wild idea that we should put a little more urban into our Adult Contemporary mix of things in like 1998. And I don't know why. Because, our core artists are like Celine Dion, and I don't think Michael Bublé was even a thing yet. But, that was what we were playing. I'm like, okay, I think we need to get a little more more urban-y in like one of the most non-urban markets in the world. Just because.
Well, what's crazy is that you got these two shifts you're doing at night while you're reading David Copperfield to write a report for your English class.
Exactly. And I was in high school too. So I was trying to do all of the high school stuff at the same time.
I got PE tomorrow.
It was fucking crazy. It really was completely insane. I listened to some of those bits that I did on the air back then, and some of them were illegal. Looking back now, I'm like, holy shit. And some of them, I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that on the air. And thank God there wasn't like a way to record these things.
And you were the boss.
Yeah.
So.
And it's just like, oh my God. But it was, it was a combination of teenage stupidity, teenage, ego. You can do anything, and given power and just hormones, everything. It was insane. But there you go. Good times. That, I think, is going to wrap up our program for today. If you like our show, please help us just spread the word of it. You do that by sharing it out there on social media, and even more importantly, pressing subscribe on whatever platform you listen to us on and leaving a review. Apple Podcasts is the big one. Please head over there and do that. We'd greatly, greatly appreciate it. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to another episode of Office Horror Stories.